and slapped her hard across the face with her open hand. For a moment, Sandra did not move. Then slowly, with an incredulous expression in her eyes, as if she could not believe what had happened, she put her hand up to her cheek. She had thought, when she first met her stepmother, that she was ill-bred and unrestrained. But although she had ranted and raged at her, this was the first time she had used physical violence. Then, as if Sandra felt that nothing she could say would have the slightest effect, she turned and walked with what she hoped was dignity out of the room. Ever since her father had married again, life at the beautiful old priory in which they lived had become more and more intolerable. In a way, Sandra could understand a little of what her stepmother was feeling, but it was hard to be found fault with, nagged and screamed at, when her father was not there every moment of the day. When his first wife died, Lord Blackstone had been inconsolable. They had been very happy together, a happiness that was spoilt only by the fact that they were perpetually in debt and never had enough money to live comfortably or to repair the ancestral home which had deteriorated year by year. There was always the deep sorrow also that Lady Blackstone had only been able to give her husband one child, but they adored their lovely daughter, who had contributed to their happiness together. Then, one cold winter, when the house seemed filled with ice, and however many logs they heaped onto the fire, the rooms were freezing, Lady Blackstone developed pneumonia and died. To Sandra, it was as if the world had come to an end, and she knew that her father felt the same. Because he could not bear the loneliness of the house without his wife, he had shut up the priory and gone north to stay with some friends, first in Northumberland and then on the borders of Scotland. He had sent Sandra, who was not yet 17, to her mother's parents who lived in Devon. They had been delighted to have her, but they were old, and Sandra had realised later that it would have been impossible for her to stay with them indefinitely. Her grandfather, however, who was an extremely well-educated man, had insisted that she should have the best teachers available, and above all, that she should speak French fluently. The war with France had brought home to the English how insular they were, and how little they knew about other countries other than their own, especially when it came to speaking other languages.
"I have travelled with my regiment all over the world," Sandra's grandfather said, "and I made it my business to be able to converse with the natives of every country I have visited."
"It must have made it much more interesting for you, Grandpapa," Sandra had remarked.
"It did," he agreed, "and I am appalled today to find that few of our leading statesmen, and even fewer of our members of Parliament, can understand a word any foreigner says to them."
"The Prince Regent is different," her grandmother chimed in. "I hear that, although it is not well received, he often speaks French during dinner at Carlton House, and even has a French chef."
Sandra had laughed.
"Most people would say that was traitorous," she exclaimed. "However, now we have an armistice with France, and the newspapers say the English are pouring into Paris to look at the French, and especially the First Consul, who is called Napoleon Bonaparte."
"It is an armistice that will not last," her grandfather had prophesied.
Less than a year later, he was proved right.
Because it pleased him, and also because she enjoyed learning, Sandra studied French and Italian, and had started to learn Spanish when her father sent for her to return home. She was glad to return, because she loved him, and also because, away from the priory, she felt that she was banished from everything that had been familiar to her since childhood. But when she arrived, she received a shock she had not expected.
"I have something to tell you, Sandra," her father said, after she had flung her arms around his neck and kissed him.